have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-covid-19. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, community productions in and around Montreal, Chautauqua, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, October 14th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests. Creator John Lachlan Stewart mocks the body politic in The King Stinks for Festival Phenomena.
It would be funny to tell a story about a really great president or a really great, great prime minister who enters into power, who everybody loves, like a Jean de Trudeau kind of president, or, you know, or an Obama type of president, but that suddenly this president would start stinking horribly.
Alison Darcy and Joseph Schrag revisit their award-winning tale about a hermit and the person who wants to be her friend.
I'd seen this documentary about this hermit living in the taiga. Her name was Agafya Bikova, and it kind of fascinated both of us how to live so disconnected from the world. So we started actually writing letters to each other.
And Dean Patrick Fleming directs Lenny Parker, One Actress in Seven Roles, a show that had been canceled, but now finally gets its start.
And it's just always interesting, right, to see what a year and a half of life does to the way you see something. It's super cool to be back at it. It's super cool to be with Lenny and so great to just have an opportunity to see the play in a different way.
The first show we are going to learn about tonight is, you could say, about the body politic. Not body, B-O-D-Y, but body, B-A-W-D-Y. Creator and performer John Lachlan Stewart uses the profane and the gross, body fluids, farts, smell, to punch up a tale about a king in power. He and another performer, Clara Prévost, are joined on stage in this new show by a troupe of rowdy puppets. It is titled simply The King Stinks, and the new work is part of the 10th edition of Festival Phenomena. John is the artistic director of Surreal Theatre Company. He is a fluid, mesmerizing performer. You might have seen him in his one-man show, Big Shot, where he plays several different roles in a cinematic show that functions like a movie thriller. John also studied directing at National Theatre School. Originally from out west, he has worked in both French and English in Montreal for years and is interested in bridging these two worlds. I spoke with John Lachlan Stewart yesterday in between rehearsals at Théâtre aux Écuries in Rosemont. Here's our conversation about The King Stinks. Welcome, John Lachlan Stewart, back to Upstage. How are you doing?
I'm so great today, in the middle of rehearsal, but going hard. It's great. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for carving us into your day. We do appreciate it. Tell me about the seeds of The King Stinks. When did you start fermenting this idea?
Yeah, you know, The King Stinks. So it started as an idea that I wanted to make something that was kind of Kafka-esque, kind of absurdist, kind of like an Ionesco play, so something absurd. And I thought, mm-hmm. like, it would be funny to tell a story about a really great president or a really great, great prime minister who enters into power, who everybody loves, like a Jean de Trudeau kind of president, or, you know, or an Obama type of president, but that suddenly this president would start stinking horribly, and that he would be the only person who could smell this, or who was the only person who felt he smelled, but that the whole populace was trying to convince themselves he didn't smell and stink, even if bodies started to fall all around them. So I thought, holy, that sounds like a hilarious, weird kind of concept, and I started getting into it. And then I started seeing puppets involved. And that's sort of how the idea for the King Stinks began.
You're trying to cover a lot of political ground here, lots of different elements floating around. Can you tell me some of the examples from real life that you were drawing inspiration from? You just mentioned, you know, Trudeau and Obama, charismatic leaders, but obviously we're talking about like bad leadership, right? So there's so many examples these days.
Yeah, it's funny. Well, actually, you know, like the president I'm trying to talk about in this play, who's obviously a fictional president, it really is, I'm trying to talk about like what happens after a president like Trump gets out of office and we have hope for the next person to come along. There's a lot of problems in the world that we talk about all the time. Is that person coming into power really going to be the solution to these problems? Is a president really what changes the world or what solves problems? Or really, is the land that we founded our systems on, is the land sort of already sort of infected and kind of already messed up in an irrevocable way? That's sort of what we're talking about. So I'd say the problems we're talking about are it's trying to sort of deconstruct the idea that, well, like the foundations that everything is kind of made on are questionable. And is there really a way at this point to fix the problems we've already gone pretty far into?
Did you look to any other examples of satire as you were kind of working on this? You referenced UNESCO as an inspiration for, you know, going into the absurd. But I'm wondering if you consumed any, maybe like even, you know, I think of Jon Stewart on TV, kind of poking fun at like government and politics. I'm wondering if there's any other inspirations for you.
Yeah, for me, my references are more in theater. And I think that's more the direction we've gone into. So I love Jon Stewart, and that type of humor is really in the Colbert Report and stuff like that. But we've leaned way more into stuff like Ubu Roy and, you know, Jarry, the writer, Ionesco, and things that are more embodied. And so to give an example, like, it's really not very intellectual humor. It's taking all the intellectual debates we have around politics and how to change the world and reducing them basically to bodily movements and barf and stink and what affects the body on a visceral level. You know, in the story, this president is living in the sort of equal of the pubis of the White House. It's in our universe. It's called the Pubis House, with all of these people who are sort of intellectuals. And really, his son at the beginning of the play is the only person who smells it. And it's this 5-year-old kid who just has this huge tummy ache whenever his dad comes home, because he's the only person at the beginning of the story who can smell that there's something terrible growing in the story. So it's kind of, it's not, I wouldn't say it's similar to the Jon Stewart kind of humor. It's more in this Ionesco sort of post-World War II absurdist kind of bodily humor.
You get down and dirty, in other words.
Oh, definitely. Lots of hilarious sort of fart jokes mixed with the intellectual. Like, I mean, there's precedent for that in really great art. And like, I keep remembering that James Joyce's writing was all of this mixing the intellectual with the bodily, visceral, guttural kind of humor. Yeah.
I love that. We're speaking with John Loughlin Stewart, who is the creator and one of the performers of The King Stinks, new piece, part of the Phenomena Festival, ongoing until October 22nd. So I can't tear my head away now from James Joyce or thinking of the body. I'm thinking of that kind of Italian comedy where I'm blanking on the name, but the name of the comedy where the clowns go so far off in opposite directions and they're gross and they're throwing up on stage and making farts and things
that. Yeah, I say, you mean like Punch and Judy, like old Punch and Judy puppet shows? Yeah, it's definitely gets into that. I think a lot of the puppets that were the really fantastic puppets built by Angela Rassanti, built for the show, we really went into Muppet humor because there's a lot of talking. And so puppets that talk, it's usually Muppet type of puppets work for that. But imagine, I'm blanking on what that old musical is called, but there's a musical that sort of takes the piss out of Muppet and Sesame Street kind of humor. And it's basically like the Muppet Show on crack, really, like sort of where we've gone with those puppets. And it is very Punch and Judy-esque for sure.
And you talk about the Muppets a little earlier about, you know, and just suddenly there were puppets. So did that development organic? Did you just kind of look up one day, maybe look at Olivier Morin, your director, and say, you know what we could use here? How did the puppets become a part of it?
Well, I've gone more and more into puppetry and like object theater in the last, say, like, I guess it's been more, I can sort of trace back, like, for the last 10 years, I've slowly been going towards more like object-based, puppet-based stuff in a lot of the work I do. So it was already in my head. But, you know, when trying to tell a story about like this magical stink sort of melting a president over time, despite their good intentions, I thought the best way of telling that story would be through some sort of relation with like puppets or objects. But it was interesting to see how, like, I already had that idea coming on, but Olivier Morin, he's a director in his own right with a vision that isn't my vision. And so our brains sort of together, like, it's he's taken several things in new directions. There's still puppets. But I had the idea for puppets before, and I've been making puppet work for a while that I find is really an effective way of telling sort of political stories and magical sort of stories with effects that would otherwise be impossible with just human bodies on stage. So it's sort of a mix of text and sort of human bodies speaking text and performing, and these objects and these puppets sort of embodying the more gross sort of effects that happen in the play.
So John, who's on stage? You're a performer, you've got your puppets as well. Is it just you interacting with them?
No, it's two actors. So it's myself and the amazing Clara Prévost, who I've worked with before. And these two actors on stage are playing sort of the right and left hand people to the president. So one of them is called Secretary Klaus. And the other character is sort of the security guard of the president. His name is Agent Dion. And so it's the security guard and then the very, very experienced secretary to the president who are playing these aides to the president, are sort of the commentators on the situation. So they live the story as it unfolds. They're kind of like the two people in the Muppet Show who are commenting from the balcony the whole time.
Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah, that's it. Those guys. And I think the idea is sort of that the people behind the president and behind the scenes are kind of the people sort of observing and puppeting and watching as the whole thing unfolds.
So puppets also as metaphors, the power behind the crown.
A little bit. Yeah. There's a little bit of that in it for sure. Or that, you know, time passes and this person, Klaus, is sort of, we don't even know how old she is or how many presidents have come and gone in her time. Mm-hmm. And she's sort of this mastermind kind of, you know, the kind of devious mastermind who goes with the president, whether they're Republican or liberal, and follows the waves of change and tries to make democracy work as it goes along, kind of thing. So, yeah.
Speaking with John Lachlan Stewart, who is the creator and one of the performers of The King Stinks, part of the 2021 edition of Phenomena Festival, the 10th edition. You're part of an anniversary year. You are a very elastic, mesmerizing performer. I've loved seeing you on stage before, so I'm really hoping you get to chew the scenery. And I get the impression you do that in this piece.
Yeah, there's a lot of scenery chewing. I mean, the play is a very fun play for actors to perform, and I think it's a fun play to see actors in, if I can humbly say so myself, in the sense that our wonderful director, Olivier Morin, he lets us go very far into full out over-the-top comedy, knowing that it's the over-the-top sort of absurd performance of this that is telling the story about how twisted politics have become. Politics live on Twitter and on Instagram posts. And basically nowadays with politics is the more outlandish you become, the kind of more votes you can get. There's a bunch of sort of studies kind of showing this kind of thing with, say, like Trump and how it worked with Trump. And so the over-the-top kind of fun performance sort of reflects that. But I think it's just a really, really good time to watch. It's a really over-the-top comedy, belly laugh city, hopefully. And Clara is an amazing performer to watch, too. It's really cool to have a French and English actor together on stage, I think, sort of perform, you know, Clara's performing in her second language. We hope to take this on in Quebecois at another point where my French will be challenged on stage. So, yeah, so we're really excited. I mean, thank you for that compliment. I love playing like a million characters on stage. Always fun. So.
Yeah, the more characters we add, the more you seem to excel.
Wow, that's really cool to hear. Yeah, I feel that way. I really love doing it. And I love it when it works within the universe of a play to tell the kind of story we want to tell. Yeah.
I'm kind of glad you brought up language there, because you've dipped your toes fully, or I don't know if the expression even counts really here, because you have done a lot of work on the French, what we would call the French side of things here, for someone who's originally not even from Montreal, right? You're from out west.
Yeah, that's right.
So I was just wondering if, like, getting to see, because politics sometimes is covered or discussed a little bit differently, depending on the two solitudes, if you want to call it that, has kind of working on this, a different side of things, giving you a different perspective of this, the topic that you're delving into, politics and leadership?
A little bit. Let's say like in the play, there's a reference to a character needing to address the public in a certain language, even though that's not their original language. And so there's some things that echo the Quebecois Anglophone relationship. I think, I'm not sure, you know, the politics and what we're representing is the world is its own unique universe that makes echo to a lot of problems in the world. One of the problems it may be, or one of the issues it may be addressing, does reference sort of the fact that Quebec is this province inside Canada, but Canada is the sort of dominant culture in the country. And but it makes reference to all sorts of other things that are Canadian issues, also things that are US issues and things that are world issues. So, but that being said, like generally working bilingually and working as much as I can in both English and French, I certainly see that our deux solitudes, our perspective on how art is made at the groundwork of how we put together a play and how we rehearse is vastly different. And so, of course, the way we perceive things is different too. Yeah.
I'm wondering if you have more or less faith in our elected leaders as you've been working your way through the King Stinks.
What a funny question to try and I try to listen. What I try to do in my life is really, really to try and listen to every side of the story with my full attention. So if I speak with conservatives, or if I speak with Republicans who think extremely differently from me, or if I meet people who are, say like people who are really strongly against, I don't know, gay marriage or whatever, I really try to stay open to understanding every side of things. That's all I can say. Like, I have faith in the system. I feel like it's a bit confusing how debate and how information about politics is spread in our current day and age, and how money is involved in spreading sort of ideas and different ways of thinking. I'm upset by how, like a lot of people, I'm very upset and fascinated by how divisive the world is, how it seems like the more people on one side scream for change of one particular thing, the more the other side of things balances out with as much sort of screaming, and how I find the middle ground of that is difficult to find. That's how I'd answer all that stuff. Like, I'm not a very sharp political person. I'm really just a playwright and an artist. And I'll admit that like what I try to do in life is try to listen to every side of things and to have empathy and listening to every perspective, because we're sort of in a, you know, I believe we're really a community, a big community. And I don't think there's like one right side of history. It's funny, like I believe there's some way to listen differently to people. And I feel politics encourages me to sort of draw a line and go onto one side of the thing, or to sort of violently oppose the other side. And it makes me kind of feel bad.
Yeah. You'd like to bridge the gap more than stand on one side of it.
Well, I guess I'd love to just understand that everybody, you know, underneath all of the shouting and underneath our sort of tribal mentality of, well, this side is the right side, I'm going to stick with this side, and at no matter what the cost is kind of really intense for me. I think there's a better way of, better discourse to have better way of talking about it, or a better way of listening. So honestly, it feels like a bit of a nightmare sometimes, I think. But I'm very fascinated by that right now, just how divisive things are and how we sort of tribalize and how we pick a side and what kinds of tensions it creates. I'm really interested in that right now in the stories that I get interested in, the stories I try to tell. Yeah.
Well, food for thought, and can't wait to visit you in the world of Great Land. Thank you so much for taking the time, John. It's much appreciated.
Yes, thank you very much.
That was John Lachlan Stewart. His new show is The King Stinks, a play for humans and puppets. It runs this Monday and Tuesday at La Sala Rosa. That is October 18th and 19th. It's part of Festival Phenomena. For tickets and more information, visit electrique.ca, electrique.ca. Festival Phenomena continues until October 22nd with plenty of eclectic fun shows to choose from. I'm Sarah DeAy, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, we reconnect with director Dean Patrick Fleming. Earlier this year, he directed actor Danny Prochu in the one-man show Every Brilliant Thing at the Siegel Center. Whereas Danny played one character, this week, Dean's new show stars an actress who takes on not one, not two, but seven different characters. That's still to come. It's true in some small way that we all experienced seclusion and isolation at some point in the last year and a half of this pandemic. Not like the life of a hermit per se, but connection could be hard to come by at times. And so you might find a bit of yourself in the next show we're going to discuss. Two Montreal playwrights happen to be revisiting a play that closely looked at the idea of being alone and forging new relationships. Alison Darcy and Joseph Schrag are longtime collaborators and the co-founders of Scapegoat Carnival Theatre. Their meta award-winning show, Yev, first premiered a little while before the pandemic started. Here we meet the title character, Yev, an old hermit who lives in a remote part of the Siberian taiga. She is the last of her family, a group of people who sought out seclusion and isolation in order to avoid persecution. But Yev won't be alone for long, because a neighboring geologist, as well as a biology student, are soon encroaching on her world. Alison plays one of the characters in the show, joining Trevor Barrett, Davide Chiazzese, and Sasha Samar on stage. The show will be presented next week in three different neighborhoods, NDG, LaSalle, and The Plateau, for free at local Maison de la Culture. I'll have phone numbers and dates for you after the interview. Here is my conversation with Alison and Joseph from last week. Welcome to Upstage, Alison and Joseph. So lovely to have you here. How are you both doing today?
Good. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's really nice to be back.
I'm so jazzed to hear Scapegoat Carnival is going to be back on stage, and you're remounting a show, a very successful show about the life of a hermit and what that's all about. I wanted to start though at the beginning, because Yev was a couple of years back. What conversations were you guys having when you started developing this story about someone living in the Siberian taiga?
Well, we started working on it back in 2016, and we were just thinking a lot about isolation and the way that people live, I guess nowadays because of technology, but you know, just the way our society is kind of moving towards isolation. And I'd seen this documentary about this hermit living in the taiga. Her name was Agafya Likova, and it kind of fascinated both of us, how to live so disconnected from the world. So we started actually writing letters to each other, because I was actually in Vancouver at the time. And I wrote to him as her, and he wrote to me as this student from McGill, kind of who was interested in getting away from everything. And that, I guess that's how it all got started.
Did it really change the story to have it start with a series of letters like this, as opposed to, correct me if I'm wrong, normally I assume if you're collaborating, you're sitting down over a laptop or two and kind of trading ideas back and forth, but instead here you're writing letters to each other from different sides of the country.
It was interesting because it posed a challenge of the form, which isn't inherently dramatic, even though there's a tradition of epistolary plays like Sarah Rule's Dear Elizabeth, or it posed a challenge in terms of creating a dramatic structure around letters, because it's not what we're used to in terms of play script. The first draft was really very long and a lot of letters, and it forced us to really start to think about how we could give a shape to something, and how to stage a correspondence.
And that was interesting because it led us to really thinking about form and structure a lot. And so this piece is now, it's in three parts, and each part is quite distinct in its own structural nature, the way that it relates to the audience, the way it relates to storytelling. And then that actually informed the set a lot. And so the set also has three different kind of distinct identities and relationships to the audience.
And one thing you were saying, Allison, before we started our conversation, was just talking about, you know, a story about living alone and depending on yourself and having only occasional contact with human life. It's suddenly become very real because 18 months ago, everything shut down and people retreated into their homes. Has the pandemic brought any kind of fresh meaning or introspection to the story of Yev?
Absolutely. Yeah. We did this show in March 2019. So it was exactly a year before the pandemic. And now doing a show about someone who lives in complete isolation and who's being reached out to by someone else who is suffering from anxiety because of their interaction with society, and who's kind of romanticizing the idea of isolation and living alone, to face that kind of question now that we've all come out of the pandemic is really interesting. Because I think initially at the beginning of the pandemic, we were all thinking about how great it would be to escape the city and get away from everyone and grow our own vegetables and live by a river, you know? And then now, I think after coming out the other side, we're all just so desperate for some human contact. So, and like the characters are, they're desperate for human contact, but yet they seek out isolation. And it's that tension between those two ideas that I think really kind of pushes a lot of the action forward. And I think we all identify with that a lot right now.
The push and pull of human connection, of like wanting to be apart, but also be with people.
Yeah,
Joseph, exactly. Are you going to add something there?
Yeah, just today we were working through the text, and Trevor, who plays Matthew, was saying that playing this character who's suddenly very afraid of groups of people, groups of students, and is far away from his parents and can't cross the border, he's like, I sort of have to play it, like, from everything I've learned from COVID.
You can't not bring in that information into the performance.
Yeah.
Since you guys are writing partners, and I'll just mention, we're speaking with Allison Darcy and Joseph Schrag, who are the co-creators and co-directors of Yev, which comes to different venues later this month. And as you're mentioning, you wrote this, you were developing this back in 2016, I think, is when it first started. The seeds were planted. For the both of you to be talking about the push and pull of the want to be connected and the wanting to be behind as co-creators, I'm wondering if there was one person who kind of embodied the desire to be with people and one person who's kind of pushing more the angle of wanting to be apart. Did you wear those hats? Did that come naturally, or did you make a decision to kind of, I'm thinking about how the, you know, how you also started with letters initially taking on the characters.
I think it's something that is just inherent in both of us as people. I'm what you would consider to be a more of a traditional extrovert, although I need a lot of alone time. I need a lot of alone time, and I get very anxious in certain situations, you know? And so I'm constantly kind of doing that little dance between wanting to be social and get that energy from being around other people, but also needing to spend a lot of time alone. And I think Joe as well, but in a slightly flipped version. Yeah.
I think I come off as not wanting to be around anybody and having a lot of social anxiety, but I get a lot of energy being around.
Yeah, he can actually withstand a lot more social activity than I can.
Well, I guess that helps when you have a partner who can have different strengths, or who can be around people more and one person is not as much, and that kind of plays to your artistic partnership. I'm speaking with Joseph Schrag and Allison Darcy. They are relaunching their presentation of Yev. I'm looking back to this clip, this review from Jim Burke, Montreal Gazette theater critic at the time, who said, "This is a beautifully constructed curiosity." And you were just talking, Allison, about how you kind of were thinking of a triptych, that there's three different viewpoints in the story. Brings me to wonder about what kind of changes you might have made to the show, or none at all. Is this going to be very much what someone might have seen in 2019, or if they're seeing it now, they're not missing anything different, or did you decide to tinker?
I think we're staying pretty close to the original. We're doing just a little bit of work here and there on moments that we, you know, thought we could live in a little bit more, you know, because there was always that, I think because Joseph and I are wearing so many different hats in this production, I'm also in the show and I was designing as well, but we're both producing it as well. I think we were really just trying to get through it the first time. And there was a lot of kind of, let's push on and fear that, you know, people might not be able to have the patience to listen to letters being read in the first section, or whether or not the second section was active enough. And now I think we're allowing ourselves some time and a little bit of softness, which is interesting. It's another kind of repercussion of COVID. I think everyone's approaching things with a little bit more patience and a little bit more kind of relaxation, sense of humor. And I think those things are feeding the work as well. We're allowing ourselves to kind of explore more silence and a little bit more space, a little bit more time.
Do you think that experience has also changed for the audience? The audience's experience is a bit different. I'm not sure if either of you have been to see anything as an audience member recently.
Not recently, though. Our stage manager, who's been working a lot, said he feels right now there's much more generosity, like especially around plays, and that people are more supportive than he's used to. So I'm hoping. I have no idea.
Yeah, both the stage manager and I happen to be working for the Festival de France-Amérique this year, and we both noticed that the audiences and the crew and people were generally more forgiving and happy just to be out and being, you know, immersed in art, you know, and not as rushed.
Something I did think was kind of interesting is that you're going to be traveling with the production for a show about a hermit. It's going places. You're going to be in La Salle, NDG, and the Plateau Mont-Royal. So basically a different Maison de la Culture, which is, I don't think, a venue oftentimes we associate with live theater. I mean, there's often presentations and music and art, but here you're going to be doing theater. This is really neat. Why choose to be in different parts of the city?
Well, actually, that was an opportunity that was offered to us from the Conseil des Arts de Montréal. They have a program called Cam en Tournée, And so it allows us to do the show around the city and offer the tickets for free, which is really nice. The conseil takes care of all of that, and they pay us our salary. And so it's a great opportunity to bring the show. Yeah, we go first to NDG and then down to LaSalle and then over to the Plateau. And it's great to be able to bring an Anglophone production to some neighborhoods that traditionally aren't getting as much theater. So that's a great opportunity for us. And it also helps us bring the show into a touring shape so that if we want to continue touring nationally, we can.
I wanted to ask you about what the next production might be and whether this is kind of easing you back, like to hear that you might want to tour it is really cool. But do you feel like this exercise of remounting, revisiting the show, does it feel like it's priming you for the next project, the next creative endeavor?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I just found it difficult to work on plays without access to performers and actually being in rooms. People, it's really inspiring just to remind myself, like, this is the whole point of theater is live performance and performers. And yeah, so I would say it's definitely honored.
It's been interesting because throughout the pandemic, Joseph and I spent all of our time basically preparing new shows to start developing. So he's been writing a lot and creating new work. And we created a digital program, which was called Soliciting Prophecy, which is actually still on our website, which you can watch all of the videos that were created on that for free on our website. So we did a little pivot towards the digital, but mainly what we did was develop new ideas. And now we suddenly have all these projects that are somewhat funded already and ready to go. And we're confronted with having to be in rooms again and be out there and be social and do the work. And it's very exciting, but it's overwhelming as well. It's, you know, the schedule we've made up for ourselves for this next year is intense to, you know, working a new, we've got a new workshop almost every month and a half of a new project. So, and then we have another tour this summer. We're potentially going to New York with another show we did called Sapientia, which is a object theater piece. So that's another big move for us. Going down to the States would be really, it'd be a new thing for us.
Just putting it in, Sapientia is just one of my favorite things of all time. It's just the most wildest adventure. So you both feel that your pandemic year and a half was put to good use because basically the creative gears have been firing and now you have so much work to get to. And I'm sure it also means now you're going to be a bit choosier about what you're going to do with your time and how you're going to, what projects you're going to move forward with.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the weird thing is it's, yeah, development. We've created all these ideas and filled up all these notebooks and applied for all this funding, but actually seeing if something works for us is really an in the room experience. So I have no idea what this year is going to bring in terms of creating a show that we want to actually produce.
But in the meantime, revisiting Yev and touching on those themes, I think it's going to be really cathartic for the audiences who are going to get a chance to see this show for free later this month. Thank you both so much for talking to me about Yev and revisiting it. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was really, really fun to be able to talk to you again. And we're really excited about the remount. So we hope everyone can come out and see it.
That was Allison Darcy and Joseph Schrag. They are the co-creators and directors of Yev, which comes to 3 Maisons de la Culture next week. Tickets are free. Wednesday, October 20th in NDG 6400 Monkland. Call 514-872-0777. Thursday, October 21st in LaSalle 7644 Edouard. Call 514-367-5000. And then finally, Friday, October 22nd, Plateau Montréal, 456 Mount Royal East. Call 514-872-2266. Visit scapegoatcarnival.com for more information and to see the show's trailer. That's spelled scapegoat and then carnival with an E at the end. I'm Sarah Day, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Actress Lenny Parker has her work cut out for her in The Blonde, The Brunette, and The Vengeful Redhead. She doesn't just play the three titular women, but she incarnates another four roles. In a 2 hours long solo show, Australian writer Robert Hewitt wrote The Blonde, The Brunette, and The Vengeful Redhead, in which we meet a suburban housewife whose world has been turned upside down. And director Dean Patrick Fleming says it's unlike anything he's ever worked on. He is artistic director at Hudson Village Theater, and he directs Lenny Parker in this new show. I spoke with Dean yesterday, just a few breathless minutes after the conclusion of the first preview performance. He took some time to speak with me just before giving his leading lady her notes. Welcome back to Upstage, Dean. Thanks so much for joining us. You are just coming off a preview show, the first ever.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, literally 15 minutes ago, the audience just walked out of our first preview and we opened tomorrow night. So it was super exciting.
How does it feel like to be back in a theater, almost kind of back to normal, and you're going through that kind of opening jitters or that opening energy?
Yeah, so good. You know, it's great. I mean, I think I'm always super aware when I say this, because I do say it a lot, and just what you just said about being back to normal, that I don't think we're there, and I actually don't want to go there. Mm. I want to have learned things from the past year and a half, and I want to change the way we do things. And I think this show's super interesting in that way, because I programmed it well before the pandemic, and we were actually working on it last March 2020, when obviously the play got canceled and our rehearsals got stopped, and it's just always interesting, right, to see what a year and a half of life does to the way you see something. It's super cool to be back at it, super cool to be with Lenny, and so great to just have an opportunity to see the play in a different way.
You say that this is like nothing you've ever worked on before. What is it about The Blonde, The Brunette, and The Vengeful Redhead that makes you feel that way?
Well, I mean, I guess on a simple level, I've never done before. And I've done a couple of one-person shows, like Every Brilliant Thing just a few months ago. But this one's just different. It's Lenny up there alone playing seven characters, and how the play is structured is just so differently from anything I've ever done. So I guess it's structure. And then it's like, I've been saying to people, the play is actually better than the title.
Okay.
And by that, I don't mean the title's bad, because I think the title is gripping and it gets people, and it got me to read the play. But the play is actually more complex and more interesting and deeper than the title may suggest. So I think it's almost like I thought, it's like managing expectations of people when they're coming to see it. So that's been a part of it as well.
It is a pretty delicious title, The Blonde, The Brunette, and The Vengeful Redhead. And it hints at what is to come, which is that Lenny puts on seven different roles. She's doing incarnating seven different women on stage.
Yeah, she plays seven different characters, and she transforms from one to another on stage. So the play is just under 2 hours, and she never leaves the stage except for intermission.
Wow.
And so part of the show is actually watching her become a new character. It's kind of amazing to watch that happen. But it's great. Somebody came out of the thing today saying if she wouldn't have watched her changing, she actually would have thought there were seven different actresses playing the roles. So, and the characters are really very, very different from each other. And Lenny is such an amazing and beautiful performer. And because she's just so honest. So each character just has layers and levels that it's surprising just how full each single one of them is.
So tell us about the first character we meet. We have a housewife. She's in the suburbs. There's something that kind of declenches the adventure or the journey that we're on. You know, is this more a comedic happening or a mystery or both?
Well, I guess both. I guess it's actually both. Yeah, we meet Rhonda Russell, and she is the redhead. And and there's an incident, and we find out during her, as we meet her, we find out that there was an incident. I'm just talking about this place so funny because it's a mystery. You have to be careful about what you give away. But there's an incident that she tells us about, and she kind of sets up the story in a way. And it's really the incident that is very, a powerful thing in her life that really sets off everything else. So that she starts our story off.
I'm speaking with Dean Patrick Fleming, the artistic director at Hudson Village Theater, pulling together the blonde, the brunette, and the vengeful redhead beginning this week at the Hudson Village Theater. Now, I'm curious about, you know, for you, you were just talking about what it's like to direct someone in a one-person show, and it's a bit of a new experience, although we did reference Every Brilliant Thing at the Siegel Center from last spring with Dani Brochu on stage. So she's got 7 roles to do. You're giving her guidance. Obviously, she's the one person on stage. Like, how does that change things for you as a director, having to kind of, you know, I guess, influence the mannerisms for the redhead and the way the blonde is going to enter the stage? Like, is that a complicated thing to unpack?
Yeah, it is. I think it's a really different, the relationship between, for me anyway, when I'm directing, the relationship between director and actor is always really exciting and interesting to me to explore. And this one is, I think it's even more of a partnership than normal. And it was similar with Dani and Every Brilliant Thing. It's a partnership because you're kind of co-authoring the production. Do you know what I mean? You have to make sure that they can own it fully and completely. So if you ask them to do something, they have to be able to completely accept that and agree with it, or else it's just too hard on them, right? And so, because they're all alone up there. There's nobody else for them to count on. So for me, I'm very much aware of Lenny's energy. I'm very much aware of her, of what she believes the piece is about, and that we agree on that. And I am also really watching out for her to make sure that this is a monster. This one, it's really like, it's by the end of the show, she's exhausted. And so we just have to be aware of that and making sure that she's okay.
At the same time, Lenny has said that it's the type of one-person show that an actor dreams of doing.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I wonder if she'd say the same thing now after having gone through the work. She's questioned it a couple of times, but she's today coming out of it. It's lovely. You know, she was very emotional actually at the end of the show today because it's a lot. It was a lot for her to do, and she's masterful. Like, her process, she doesn't give in. She's always honest. She's always goes to the depth that the character needs to go to, and so it's quite it's just fabulous to just watch it and be able to witness it.
Do you find it's, you can't speak on her behalf necessarily, but have you discussed the fact that, you know, we're still getting back to normal? We haven't had that many stage productions still. And here she is taking on not one, but 7 roles on stage.
Yeah, I've noticed. I think we're all aware that we're a bit different now. Our energies are different. How much we can do is different. So we've structured, even coming back with Every Brilliant Thing and Strawberries in January, we structured our rehearsals very differently than normal, or than in the past. Than in the past. And I think we're going to continue just working a little bit over a longer period of time and shorter days. I've believed in this for a long time, but I think it's necessary right now. And on a one-person show, it's even more necessary. So I think we were both aware of how much she had to take on and how to structure our time. But even then, we were surprised. You know, the play is actually bigger than we both, I think, thought, because I go back to that whole idea of it being more complex than the title, and those complexities just take more time to figure out.
I wanted to ask about the visual of the whole show. You referenced Wes Anderson films, I guess, like The Royal Tenenbaums, the new film, The French Dispatch. There's a very specific kind of quirky way that he lays out things, but it's also in a way very theatrical. Can you tell me what you've adapted from these movies for the visuals?
Yeah, so every character has their own set, in the play that sort of lives within the larger set. And so Hannah Fisher and I and Peter Vatsis, who are the set costume and lighting designers, we just talked about using Wes Anderson as an inspiration because he's so specific. He's super specific in his color scheme and he's super specific in his shapes and the relationship of everything within a space. And so, I just love his films. And I mean, if you want to have fun, Google Wes Anderson sort of design rules, and there's a whole lot out there and it's super fun and interesting, but it's the idea of setting up a space that one human can completely encompass and play within. So we just took that as an inspiration and a starting point.
I'm speaking with Dean Patrick Fleming, who is the artistic director at Hudson Village Theater, gearing up to present The Blonde, The Brunette, and The Vengeful Redhead starting this week at Hudson Village Theater. Dramatist Robert Hewlett is the person behind the story. And I just thought it would be fun to talk about the way it was constructed. And like, it's a mystery, obviously. And you have all these characters woven together, performed by one person. What was going through your head when you first, you know, leafing through the script and trying to like make sense of it? As I would imagine, the first time you read anything and you're trying to visualize it, right? Like, this is a complicated story.
Yeah, totally. And it takes a couple of reads actually to really go, oh my God, okay, this is what happened. Because not every character tells the truth all the time. And so actually have to figure out the facts and who's who. So on the first read, it's quite difficult to do. And again, I kept getting surprised by the script and what Robert was doing. And that was super fun. And then I have to say really early on, I was like, there's really not many people that could pull this off well. And so, so it was really important to me that Lenny would get on board. Because that was one of the things, right? It is such a huge challenge that you just need the right person, and or else it does become kind of a lightish piece. And I don't think that's where it lives in the most interesting way.
What is the sense you're getting from the community, the staff, as you gear up to present this show?
Everybody's super excited. Everybody's really excited about the piece. It's super theatrical and really just really different from the stuff from what we've been doing. In some ways, it's kind of a fun direction to go in. I guess since I got here, it's part of the fun theatrical adventure that I kind of want to go on, so that you're not actually saying, I want a new audience. You're saying, no, I want the same audience to go on this adventure with us. And so you're trying to entice everybody to embrace new things. And this piece does that so well. So I think everybody's really excited about it. And I think everybody's also super curious because we've been really careful to not give away the story. So that's super fun too. So there's even a couple of staff members that haven't seen it yet and they don't know. They just have seen the sets and they're very excited by it all.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a heck of a ride. Thank you so much for taking the time, Dean. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Sarah. I appreciate talking to you.
That was Dean Patrick Fleming, artistic director at Hudson Village Theater, and his new show has just opened and continues until October 24th in Hudson, just west of Montreal. The title again is The Blonde, The Brunette, and The Vengeful Redhead. Tickets are $39 or $30 for those 30 and under. Visit Village Theater for tickets and more information, or call 450-458-5361 or email hvtbox@villagetheater.ca. And interesting to note that Dean actually begins rehearsals for his next show this coming Sunday. It's the remount of Every Brilliant Thing at the Siegel Center, all about a young boy who helps his parents rediscover all the beautiful things in life after a really difficult period. It's going to open later this month and launch the Siegel's new season. For more information, visit siegelcenter.org. And speaking of the Siegel Center, I'm back this year animating the Siegel at the Center talks. We're going to be online for the next little while, at least perhaps until the new year. So we're going to be touching on the themes of Every Brilliant Thing on Sunday, October 24th. So that's not this weekend, but the weekend after, and it's going to be online. You'll want to check out SiegelCenter.org or the Facebook or YouTube channels of the theater. I hope you can join us on October 24th. If you're looking for things to do this weekend, Ambrasse continues at Théâtre du Nouveau Monde. It is the final weekend for Adieu, Monsieur Hoffman at Théâtre du Rideau Vert. And as we mentioned, the Blonde, the Brunette, and the Vengeful Redhead just started at Hudson Village Theatre. It's running for a little while longer. And interestingly, there is a brand new show at a museum. Pointe Callière is putting on a whole show all about the circus. So I'm sure that's going to be super interesting. And also, speaking of museums, the McCord Museum celebrates 100 years. It opened on October 13th, 1921, and entry, admission is free for the next 100 days. So that's always kind of a bonus, and you can go see things for free. I checked out the Chapleau exhibit, all about the caricaturist, who's really well known on the French side, of course. It's a fantastic show, and there's a lot of other things going on there. So the McCord is free for the next 100 days if you're looking for something to do. And of course, the festival phenomena continues until October 22nd. We mentioned one show coming up this Monday and Tuesday, The King Stinks, but there are events this weekend as well, in person, outdoors, and indoors as well. Visit electrique.ca for more information. In other news in the world of entertainment, two creatives from Quebec City have received the only license ever given to create a circus show based on the work of Charlie Chaplin. It's a world exclusive. The two people involved are Richard Aubey and Caroline Perron. So they're going to be working on a brand new smile inspired by the work and life of Charlie Chaplin. It's called Smile, and it's going to hit the road in fall 2022. It's going to be a global song. The title Smile is adapted from the title of a song that Charlie composed for his film Modern Times, which was released back in 1936, and it's since been covered in a bunch of different ways. So that's something to look forward to if you are a circus fan. That is Caroline Perron and Richard Aubey, who are going to be working on a circus show inspired by the life of Charlie Chaplin. Smile-chaplin.com is the website if you'd like to find out more information. And also today, we learned about the nominees for the Canada Council for the Arts, who have announced the 2021 Governor General's Literary Awards finalists. And of course, there is a drama category, so I wanted to mention five nominees on the English side. Crippled Paul David Power from St. John's, Selfie by Christine Quintana of Vancouver, Sexual Misconduct of the Middle Classes by Hannah Moscovich from Halifax, Take De Milk Na by Jivesh Para Sram of Vancouver, and Two Indians by Phelan Johnson. That is the only nominee from Montreal. And then on the French side, five nominees again, including Emily Monet, who wrote Okinum, and she's based in Chelsea. Emily was my guest a few weeks back. She performed Okinum at Centaur Theatre. The other nominees, Bande de Bouffon, Jean-Philippe Lehoux from Montreal, Combattre le YY, Rebecca Dereste, also from Montreal, and Copo by Mishka Lavigne of Gatineau, and Emma Haché, who wrote Johnny. She is from New Brunswick, the only nominee from outside Quebec. So congratulations to the nominees, the 2021 Governor General's Literary Awards. The winners are going to be updated on November 17th. And you can visit ggbooks.ca if you want to find out the nominees in the other categories. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard John Lachlan Stewart, creator and performer for The King Stinks at Phenomena Festival, Scapegoat Carnival's Alison Darcy and Joseph Schrag, co-writers of Yev, and Dean Patrick Fleming of Hudson Village Theatre. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at CKUT.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, spoken word coordinator at CKUT, for making sure this show gets to air. And a very big thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Stay safe and have fun. Up next is Grey Matters.
Saturday, October 16th at The Ritz. Orchestra. Criminal returns to the stage armed with their repertoire of ancient criminal tunes from Moldova, Morocco, Greece, Ukraine, Poland, Argentina, Afghanistan, Russia, and Mexico. Orquesta Criminal is a 10-piece of improv performers interpreting inspired renditions of adventurous gangster songs from a dangerous and forgotten era. Saturday, October 16th at The Ritz. Orquesta Criminal with special guests Meduse. Tickets $15 in advance at blueskiesturnblack.com, $20 at the door. Doors at 6:30, a co-presentation of CKUT.
If you have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-COVID-19. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening and welcome to the October 14th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we're presenting two half-hour documentaries on the Canadian residential school crisis, one that was produced by CFRC and the other by CFRO, both campus community radio stations. So without further ado, here they are.
Welcome back. My name is Dana, and in the first half of this documentary, I shared a little bit about my own experience related to adoption in the Aboriginal community, being a Cree woman and having a sister who is also Aboriginal that was adopted into our family. I then brought you through the experiences of two Aboriginal women in Kingston, Ontario, who had connections to the 60s scoop, and how